from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum, and I'm Michael Krasny. A soldier named Ulysses is left for dead and lost at sea, pestered by mischievous gods and desperate to return home to Oakland. That's the setup of award-winning playwright Marcus Gardley's Black Odyssey, which uses African-American folklore and music to reinvent Homer's classic poem. We'll talk with Gardley about the play, which opens this week at Cal Shakes, and about his own journey home to Oakland. Then at 10:30, David Perlman will join us in studio. He recently retired as science editor from the San Francisco Chronicle at the age of 98, after 70 years at the newspaper. Join us next after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Award-winning playwright Marcus Gardley's Black Odyssey opens at California Shakespeare Theater this week in Orinda. The play mixes African-American music and cultural lore with Homer's classic long poem, The Odyssey, and it follows an American soldier lost at sea and left for dead as mischievous gods manipulate his journey home to Oakland. The play is something of a return home for Marcus Gardley, an Oakland native, and he joins us in studio for this segment of the Forum program. Good to have you here.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, congratulations. You've really made your mark, and I should say came up through San Francisco State and Oakland, Oaktown, as it's often called by the natives. I have to also commend you on the fact that you have now started a play about Marcus Garvey. People confuse your name with Marcus Garvey, who, I should mention to listeners, was the head of the Universal Negro Improvement Association back in the 1920s.
Absolutely.
It was a Back to Africa movement, basically.
That's right. That's right.
So you do get confused sometimes, your name, yeah?
Yeah, almost every day someone confuses me for him. Or, you know, they assume that I'm famous or older than I actually am. But I find it to be a compliment. I'm a huge admirer of his work and his message. So,
well, the message certainly captivated many people, and so does your messages. I mean, you've done yeoman work here, if I may say so, kind of combining African-American folklore with, well, Homer.
Yes.
It's ambitious.
Thank you.
And let's talk about it. I mean, you've got Ulysses Lincoln, this U.S. soldier, back from the Gulf War, kind of lost at sea and being manipulated by powers that be or powers that are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm obsessed with, you know, myth, legends, and also this notion of why we keep retelling stories. You know, and so I wanted to adapt the Odyssey, particularly because I felt like it was a story of a man struggling with inner demons. And I was doing this work in Chicago, which I still am doing, around young black men who have PTSD because of the neighborhood they live in. And so doing a lot of research and talking to them, I really wanted to explore sort of what is it like to find strength within yourself, which is what this character does, so that you can make positive and better choices, you know, in the future.
You got a message, and it's a strong message, an important one. It's also a play really about going home.
That's right.
Yeah, which Ulysses did, of course. And you rejoices Ulysses ever?
I have, yes.
And so the myth is all intertwined there, too.
Oh, yes, yeah. And the language there is so lush.
It is, and so is yours, by the way. It's lush and lyrical. And the play is going to be at Cal Shakes. You got Eric Ting directing, who's been on Forum with us, and that's exciting, working with him, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, he's the best. I worked with Eric several years ago on a project I did about African-American men in prisons called The Box, which we produced in New York, and I instantly just became a friend and a collaborator. So I'm excited to work with him this year.
Well, you've done a lot of work. You've got Dance of the Holy Ghost, which was done at the Yale Repertory Theater, The House That Will Not Stand, which people may remember from the Berkeley Rep. You're actually, in fact, working on that as a trilogy, aren't you?
I am. And a movie, believe it or not. But that period of time, there's so many stories that I think should be told. A lot of people do not know about that history, so I'm trying to explore that more and see what's there.
Well, let's also talk about Oakland in this, since I didn't know Oakland and the Oakland Hills and Heaven were coming out of the imagination as being linked together. That's really something. You had to do some changes to get this Bay Area focused, didn't you?
I did. Originally, the play took place in Harlem. I was living at Harlem at the time. I lived in Harlem for 10 years. And the show was produced in Denver. And because the show, the play is so much about home, and because I'm bringing it back home, I really wanted to change the location and really sort of write a love song for my city. And so by virtue of doing that, I think I actually found the core of the play, and I don't think I'm going to change the location anymore. It's going to be always Oakland.
So what do you love about Oakland?
I love everything about Oakland. I always say Oakland is the only place in the world where it has a smell. And for me, Oakland smells like baked bread. I don't know why. You know, if you ever drive by 580, there's that smell of bread. And Oakland is also the place where everybody has migrated and has formed some type of family unit. So I love that about Oakland. And then also, too, when I dream, I always dream of Oakland. The places that the characters that appear to me are always in Oakland. So it's always going to be home for me, and I'm always going to write about it.
Also, the church was home for you in a big way.
Oh, yes.
And in fact, you've talked about a lot of your work as being linked to sermons and church music, and we'll talk about the music as well. But that influence, talk about your early influences there.
Well, my dad's a preacher, pastor, and so I grew up in the church, spent literally most of my life inside a church. And that's, I think, where the influence of music, that's where that comes from. But also my father said that I was ordained and called to the ministry when I was young. And that scared the living daylights out of me because I didn't want to do that.
And then and James Baldwin.
James Baldwin, yeah. Who's my favorite writer of all time. I think I found my calling in the theater. I think the theater is my church. And my plays are like sermons in that way. So I've come full circle and accepted his calling, if you will.
Well, there also is a calling. It's funny. The New Yorker compared you to Lorca. This is good company to be in. Pirandello, Tennessee Williams. I mean, about the best company one can find.
Oh, yes.
But I keep thinking, like, this play is a family play. A lot of your works are family plays. Excuse me. So I think of somebody like August Wilson, and you're writing a trilogy, too.
Oh, that's true. That's very true.
He'd been a major influence?
A huge influence. He actually was a big fan before he passed, and this play I wrote, Dance the Holy Ghost, was a huge a play that he wrote.
I can see the influence there, yeah.
Yeah, he's a big influence.
And this is a play that's going to be running how long?
It's going to be running for 4 weeks, and we want everyone to come out. It's a big, epic play, and not only is it about Oakland and about family, but it's also about storytelling and the stories that we tell each other and the stories that we pass down.
And it's about the blues.
And it's about the blues.
I mean, you can't avoid it. Let me actually invite our listeners into this discussion. But I want to talk about the music in the play. There's so much to talk about in this play. It's rich, and it's going to be performed at Cal Shakes in Orinda, running through September 3rd. But if you'd like to talk to our guest, and he has now really established himself as a playwright, talk about Oakland with us, or talk about Black Odyssey, and maybe even talk about Marcus Garvey. We welcome your involvement in the program. Our toll-free number is available. The number to call is 866-733-6786. I'd like to hear particularly from some of you who may have some thought about myth and storytelling, particularly the rather ambitious combination of using African-American folklore and African-American tales with, Greek myth, really. Again, you're welcome to join the program. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us with any questions or comments by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or tweet us, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, and we do welcome your involvement. I should say that there was a very engaged audience at the preview last night. But let's talk about the music, because you've got Linda Tillery, I've always been an admirer of, as I think I told you before we went on the air, Molly Holm. But it begins with, opens with a Yorban kind of chant.
Oh, yes. I really wanted to put a ritualistic song at the top, sort of a call to worship, a call to storytelling at the top. And what we also tried to do is really pick a song that represents every period in African-American history in the play. So you can traverse not only through periods in African-American history in the scenes, but also via music as well.
Well, you've also got Deep River, which is one of the great spirituals, and just in the opening in this Afro-Cuban chant, you're hit with music right away.
Oh, yeah. Music is a character for me in the play. It is also the foundation of the story. And so when characters are overwhelmed with emotion, when words no longer are able to express how they're exactly feeling, the chorus and the characters will sing.
But this all sets a tune. You got Still Waters Run Deep as well. That all sets a tune. Yeah.
All sets a tune. That's right.
Sets a tune and sets a tone. I made an interesting kind of mistake there. Not intentionally. You actually were an African-American or studies major at San Francisco State?
I was. And a French major.
And then how much did... It's funny, you avoided a class from me when I was teaching there. You were there as a student. I was actually teaching some dramatic literature. So we both are much poorer for that. But how much did your academic background help you with fan? Because you got so much here that's weighty in the way of folklore and so forth.
Immensely. I mean, especially my studies at San Francisco State. When I was a student there, I became obsessed with just storytelling in general, but so many things. That's why I had three majors. I'm a history buff, but I'm also obsessed with, sociopolitical issues. And so that all sort of found its way into my work. And the great thing about San Francisco State is it's when I decided to become a playwright, when I decided to become a writer. And my first day in a playwriting class, I realized that this is what I want to do with my life. Before then, I was going to be James Baldwin and move to Paris and write novels.
thus the French literature.
Huh? Exactly. And so my final year in the French major, I couldn't afford to study abroad. And so I took a writing class and the bug hit and I applied to Yale and I was in it. Directly went to the Yale Drama School after San Francisco State.
And work with that old Robert Brustein Yale Repertory.
That's
theater,
right.
Huh? But you've got, a lot of... how do I put this? A lot of us, you mentioned politics in your play, and there's certainly a political realm here about PTSD and Gulf War and so forth, as you said. But so much of the playwriting by African-American playwrights, I think of actually a former student of mine, Ed Bullins, who established the Lafayette Theater in Harlem, was, and think of somebody like Baraka, it was angry, and it was filled with a sense of this play should politicize, and that's its primary purpose.
That's right.
Get our community galvanized and all that sort of thing. You're in a different realm. You're, like I said, in some ways, may I put it, poetry is more important to you maybe than politics. Would that be fair to say?
I agree. I feel like I'm somewhere in between the August Wilson and Ed Bullins of the world. And I think language and poetry is the real power and the real weaponry of the theater, and that if you use words in the right way, they get into our bodies and they make us think, they challenge us, they inspire us to change and make positive change in the world. So
what kind of positive changes would you like to come out of the people who see this play perform, for example, read it like I did?
Two things. I hope that people are inspired to forgive a friend and love a stranger is the two things that I ask, which is a big ask, but I think the power of theater can do that. And so the play, I won't give it away, but the play at the very end asks you to do something. And all of my work does that. I really got that from Brecht. I think his plays ask us to do something, to be active participants in the world. And I think that's what great art does.
And Brecht was really a master at, well, using didacticism, I suppose. That's what the Epic Theater was supposed to be all about, right?
That's
teaching
right.
people and having lessons and so forth. But those things always seem to get away from him because he was just naturally extraordinary talent.
That's right.
One of the greatest playwrights of the 20th century.
Absolutely.
Let me bring some callers in here. Let's start with Noah from San Jose. Noah, hi.
Hi, how's it going? Michael and Marcus, thanks so much for talking with me. I really wanted to, first, let you know I'm very excited to see the show. But also, I wanted to make a comment about the use of Homer's Odyssey through, so many different variations. It's both an ambitious undertaking to have it be a part of, African-American folklore through your play, as well as the experience of, Oakland and the Bay Area. But one of the greatest things about that piece of literature is that it can be seen through many cultural lenses, and no matter what you do with it, it only illuminates the classic literature more. It seems to get better and better the more times it's told through the more lenses.
Absolutely.
You agree?
I do agree 100%. Yeah.
Right. Well said, Nolan. Thank you for that call.
Thank you.
Let's talk about, you did a play called Every Tongue Confess, and Felicia Rashad was in that?
That's correct. Yeah. In D.C., yes.
And it, tell us about that, because it got a lot of attention for you, didn't it?
Oh, yes, very much so. When I was growing up, obviously in Oakland during the 1990s, there were two things happening that caused me to race home after high school and watch TV. The O.J. Simpson trial, and there was, if you recall, a rash of burnings in the South. Black churches were being burned, and they could not find the arsonists that were doing that. Because I grew up in a church, that was the story I was most obsessed with. But the O.J. Simpson trial was, you know, captivating everybody. It was taking over the news, the airwaves. So I was trying to find that piece of what, have they found the arsonists? Is this going to keep happening? And what does this mean? And so I started to collect all these news articles and all of this research about these arsons. And decades later, I found these, you know, all these news articles that I collected. And I decided I should write a play about this moment in history. And so the play is really about a church that is burned and a community coming together and forgiving the arsonists.
Like, well, that church background of yours keeps going to forgiving,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Can't help it. And so I did that play in D.C. It was the first play actually produced in the theater in the arena, built a new theater, Arena Stage. They have three theaters within their complex, and they built the new theater for new work. And I had the honor of having the first play ever produced there.
Indeed. It was an honor. And let me get another caller on. Bob, yeah. That's you. Hi.
Oh, hey.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. I'm a big fan of Ulysses, and it's obviously a story about, you know, the sea. And I was wondering if you were thinking about a connection between that and slavery. Thanks.
Yes, actually, if you get a chance to see the play, there's a huge connection between the sea and Ulysses and slavery. The main character actually gets lost in the Middle Passage. In one moment in the play, because he's like Ulysses is at sea and lost. This character is actually lost in African-American history. Great question.
We'll also talk about the mythic figures here that are kind of playing a chess game with him. I mean, you got Poseidon,
yes,
instead of Poseidon, and Deus, yes, which means God, of course, and just deciding what his fate is going to be, basically.
Absolutely. It's still the same characters we know from the Homer myth, but they have been stylized, obviously, to fit in this Afrocentric world. And so what I love about adapting is I try to stay true as possible to the original material, but also give it flavor and also add my own sort of humor to it.
Yeah, Superfly Tiresias. I
yes,
like that.
Exactly.
Shagadelic Prophet. That's splendid. We're talking, by the way, if you've just joined us, with Marcus Gardley. He's here with us in studio. Cal Shakes is presenting his play Black Odyssey, and it runs August 9th through September 3rd at the California Shakespeare Theater in Orinda. Here's a comment, actually, from Jerome. It says, I studied the Odyssey in high school and college and reread it fairly recently. I saw Black Odyssey last night and was exhilarated, entertained, and educated by turns. I couldn't tell if Marcus was channeling Homer or if Homer had returned and manifested Marcus. The whole Cal Shakes team has created something extraordinary.
Marvelous. Thank you so much.
Nice to get those kind of reviews.
Yeah, that's not
right,
bad.
Right over the transom. Let's get another caller on here, and that's Carson. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Hi.
You're on the air.
So I work house at Cal Shakes, and I've absolutely enjoyed it. I was there last night, and I was there for the dress rehearsal. But one question I have is that what stands out to me is that the subscriber base at Cal Shakes is predominantly old and predominantly white. And I was wondering, Marcus, if you have something perhaps a little bit different that you'd like these old white folks from Orinda to take away that might be a different experience for black audiences coming to see your show.
That's a great question. You know, my dream for the theater is that the theater is a diverse place for people of all backgrounds, ages, sexual orientations, faiths, class, gender. And so I think the most powerful thing about the play in this particular production is that it allows for everyone to see it together. And there is an announcement that happened last night before the play in which the artistic director encouraged people to speak to the actors, to be active participants in the drama. And that happened last night in a very real way. And so to me, that's the biggest gift. A playwright, a play is essentially a blueprint. And then the actors bring and put breath, if you will, into the words. But it's this message and the acting in concert with the audience that creates, to me, the real fire. And so the one gift and the one ask I would ask, you know, the subscriber base, the traditional subscriber base at CalShakes, is to open your heart and mind and allow for a new experience. That's what theater is, and that's when theater is most powerful. So thank you for that question.
And thank you indeed. We're talking to award-winning playwright Marcus Gardley, an Oakland native, who has come home. Actually, Ed Bolins wrote a play called Son Come Home. I should mention, with all the love of Oakland that you've been giving us here, you got a SF hat on.
I do.
San Francisco hat. And Lois writes, "The house that will not stand. Can't wait for it to come to Orinda. Congratulations. You rock, and so does SF State." And here's Abril, who says, "I teach philosophy at SF State. I'm currently planning some curriculum using the blues as a philosophical platform. I'm curious to know how you are using the blues as a teaching tool in your work. Any thoughts would be greatly appreciated."
Oh, that's a beautiful question. There's a moment in the play in which Ulysses, the central character, drowns, and he falls to the bottom of the sea. And it's the blues that there's a blues number sung by a character who is reminiscent of Bessie Smith. And she sings a blues. And by virtue of her singing the blues, she's given him CPR. And so I'm obsessed with the blues. And I feel like the blues is magic. It's music that actually, you know, the myth or the stereotype of the blues is that it makes you sad, when obviously it does the obvious, where it actually gives you life and inspires you by giving voice to your emotion, to your sadness. You are actually experiencing therapy. And so in this way, this character brings the central character back to life.
I had the privilege of a couple of interviews with the great August Wilson, whom we've mentioned.
Oh, wow.
And he said he was influenced more by the blues than anything in his life.
Amazing.
And, I mean, you've brought that to the fore as well. So pleased to have had you with us. Congratulations on all your work.
Thank you so much.
And you even did a play about Betty Shabazz, right?
I did, called X. It's about Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz being the hero.
Thank you. Continue your good work.
Thank you so much.
Continued success at CalShakes in Orinda. You can see the play through September 3rd, Black Odyssey by Marcus Gardley. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with David Perlman, who is finally retiring. He's going to be 99 years old this month, has written for the Chronicle for over 70 years as its lead science writer, and still has much vitality and much to say. Stay tuned for that. It's coming up ahead for all of us here at KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.